Welcome to Trainers Talking Tech on Tuesday.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Trainers Talking Tech on Tuesday. My name, as always, is Kyle Rosenthal, and I am joined, as always, by the one, the only, Brian Bork. How are you, Brian?
I couldn't be happier if I were twins.
Okay. I'm just thinking how that would work. Would that, like, if you were twins, would that mean you'd have to halve your happiness?
That would mean that I would double my happiness, I think. I think that's what that expression is supposed to mean.
I've never actually heard that expression before.
You've never heard that expression? Okay. There is a old movie, old, you know, relatively to most of our listeners. I think it was in the early 90s called Doc Hollywood with a... at the time, a hot and upcoming actor by the name of
Michael J. Fox.
That's right, Michael J. Fox. Thank you.
I know Doc Hollywood.
Okay, well, Doc Hollywood had a mayor character, the guy who played Ogden Steers on MASH, whose name? That is his name, David Ogden Steers. That's the actor.
David
name.
Ogden Steers, who actually just recently passed away.
Yes, he did, and a loss, because his character in Doc Hollywood is one of my favorite characters of his. And but anyway, he at one point was talking about how happy he was in his town that he ran, and he said, "I couldn't be happier if I were twins." And I always thought that was a very apt description of perfect happiness. But it sounds like you are so happy that you are seeing little Tweety birds about your head.
sorry, I'm currently not, but so there's a little bit of oddness. So I'm not in my office. I am somewhere in a secret, super secret location in Mount Gravatt in Queensland, in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. Just basically through timing, I was getting my car serviced today and I completely forgot we were recording today. So I'm actually sitting outside. It is quite nice. I'm sitting outside in on a park bench. I am talking to you through my headset. Now, like, we're and I know we mentioned a few episodes ago that I invested in one of the Google Pixel XL2s and also the Google Pods, I think they're called, or something like that. So I'm actually using those now. The odd thing with those, from what we've been discovering as we've been talking, is they actually do really good ambient noise cancelling from the noise that's around, like, sort of. So I don't know if you've found with headphones, and you may not have had this, but I seem to do this quite often, where I'll be out running or something like that, or I'll be out and about with a pair of wireless headphones on, and the problem is that the microphone is normally dangling somewhere around, you know, dangling around one of your ears, but it's really not great for voice, like, for actually picking up voice and sounds. Uh-huh. So you actually and it picks up everything around it. Whereas with these, what the microphone is actually inside is basically sitting inside your ears. So it seems to be quite good with getting rid of a lot of the ambient noise. I was actually walking along a fairly main road before, and it was taking out a lot of those noises, but as Brian mentioned before, when we were checking, is that it does actually seem to pick up a lot of the smaller noises, such as birds. Yes. So if you hear any of those, you'll know that that's what it is. So it's not as Brian accused me of before, the communicating with birds.
Although I do have to say the ambient bird noises from Australia does sound a little bit like you're in Jurassic World.
Well, because yes, similar to Jurassic World, the majority of things that live here do try and kill you.
Exactly. Yes.
So it is pretty similar. So before we go any further, we should do some of the housekeeping. And Brian, I think you're doing that today. So
I'm doing that because Kyle doesn't have his memory sheet in front of him. So let's start with how you can subscribe to this podcast. You can do that by going to trainertechtalk.net. And if you would prefer to reach out to us in a little bit more immediate way, you can do that on the Twitter by using @TuesdayTTT. You could also reach out to me directly @BrianBork LODS. And Kyle, how would they reach out to you directly?
They can get me @WindowsPCGuy is my Twitter handle.
And at this point is a good point to mention our good and I was gonna say Maleficent, but I know that's not the right word. The good and righteous. There, we'll just go with that. Magnanimous. There we go. Good and magnanimous. Please edit that, James.
So you were referring to our sponsor as
our sponsor
as
Maleficent.
As the bad character from
Snow White.
Snow White. Okay, sure, no problem.
You know, I'm sure that nobody at our organization, especially the marketing person, would have any issues with that whatsoever. No,
I'm sure.
Our very
I'm sure.
good sponsor, who is Learn On Demand Systems, who can be reached at www.learnondemandsystems.com, because they couldn't come up with a longer handle. Or longer domain names. There we go. But they are doing great things across the world, bringing labs to people. And that actually segues into our first bit here, which is, I guess we're doing bits now. what have you been up to since we last spoke? Because we last spoke at a super secret location somewhere in the heart of Seattle, was it not?
No, we've spoken since then.
Well,
because we've recorded since then, because we last had our last one was when we had our guest of Rose coming. Oh no,
nope.
No, you're right. It was
after. I got those backwards.
You're right. It was that's right. It was a super secret location in Seattle. You're right.
In Seattle. The reason I remember that is because it was Mother's Day, because I had the super secret guest of my mother.
That's right. That was the worst gift you could ever get your mum, I have to say.
Well, she got to talk to you, and she was pretty pleased about that, I do have to report.
Well, there you go. That was because I turned on the intelligent questions.
That's true. You did.
Just for your mum.
But so after talking to my mom and us leaving and departing there, you ran off to someplace super secret all by your lonesome. And where was that?
I did. I went to Chicago. I went to the VeeamON conference in Chicago. So that was the first of the it was a really good conference from a training perspective. Like the rest of the conference, I'm sure, was great as well. I actually didn't see many of the sessions, but from all intents, like all reports that I had, the rest of the conference was pretty good as well. But obviously, the interest that we have is from the training perspective. And one of the things that was launched at VeeamON was the partnership between Learn On Demand Systems and Veeam. For being the official delivery platform for their online lab environment. So that was the first time that had kind of been done at a public done publicly at scale with Veeam, and it was really interesting to see. And I think we've talked before about different delivery methods and how to deliver training and that sort of thing, but it was interesting to see the impact that something that we kind of take for granted as a change of delivery makes. And so what I mean by that is that one of the things that Veeam have done previously is that essentially everything was either locally hosted or was being remote hosted on, you know, like on the person that was actually running the training, it was essentially running off a bunch of their servers, which then meant that people had to RDP, et cetera, and to be able to get to set of VMs. And more importantly than that, they had their training courses for the Veeam administrator course is a 3-day course. And previously, the way that the training had been set up was that it was a 3-day course to be able to get you through certification. You had to actually build the environment from, you know, start on Monday. That same environment you would use as a building process to get all the way through to Wednesday. And there were certain things that you had to make sure as the trainer that you actually pushed through to get to on each day. So as an example, at the end of day one, you would actually have to kick off a backup process, and that backup process was then used on day two. So if you didn't get to that point, then it meant that you essentially, like, you'd be behind the eight ball on day two, because obviously backups take time to perform and that sort of thing. So by using the hosted platform on Learn On Demand, on the Learn On Demand systems, one of the things that happened was that when Rasmus built out the lab environment, he actually did all the modularization. So module 1, module 2, module 3, module 4, module 5. So they all have their own individual labs. And that was a really pivotal change to how that delivery method.
Pivotable, that's perfectly fine.
to how their actual delivery happens. Because it meant then that, it meant a couple of things. One is that students who arrived late, and there was a couple of students who were not at, say, for instance, day one as an example, or got called away early on day one because, you know, work commitments, that sort of thing. There was one guy who was kind of fighting a few fires at his office. And that then meant that student wasn't behind. Now, you know, like if you're teaching a traditional class, like say for instance you've got 10, 15 people in a class, if you have one student who kind of falls behind, then you can kind of work to get them up. And like talking with Chris, one of the other trainers, what he would always do was he'd actually always run his own set of VMs, which he would then give to a student if something went wrong. You know, or if, you know, if it was in that sort of circumstance where they'd fallen right behind, or, you know, or if they'd mucked something up, you know, and that's the worst case scenario. You know, if they've mucked something up on day one, and then, you know, on day three, that's when it sort of rears its head that something went wrong. So by being able to skip around the modules without having to rely on, you know, module three being completed before you can move on to module four, then it means that it opens up the training a lot more. And I never kind of, you know, I've always realized it, but never really realized it, if you know what I mean. Like, sort of, it was something you think about and you say, but it was really interesting to see the direct impact of someone being able to do that for the very first time. The other thing was, so that was one thing, that it changed the pace of the course. It meant that there wasn't so much pressure on, okay, these are the marks that we actually have to hit to be able to get so that we can progress the next day. So it meant that the training could actually be delivered differently. You could slow down some more to answer questions. And in particular, with the classes, like the class sizes, because it's at a conference, and they were being delivered as post-conference type training, there was there was one class that was 60 people. And there was another class that was 30 people. There was another course, which was a one-day course, which was a which had I think from memory it had 65 people in it as well. But like the when you start talking about like you know classes of that scale, if you have one or two students that kind of that fall behind, then it's really hard to focus on them because you've got to concentrate on all the other students. So that was, and that's you know something I've certainly come across before, like sort of where you've got students who are, where you've got large classes where you kind of have to, for want of a better term, ditch students, like you know, basically push them off to the wayside. It's like, well, we don't have time to be able to focus on your issue because I've got the majority of students are in the right place, and we have to make sure that we get like you know that we've got things to go through. So yeah, it was one of those things that made a huge impact on how that training was being delivered, and it meant that you know the students could go home at night and they could keep on working. That was one thing. The other thing was that if someone hadn't completed a lab, that they didn't have to stay back to be able to complete it. They could, you know, they could go home and do it from home to complete it, or they could come in early the next day, etc. They could, you know, do it from anywhere. And it meant then that if you are, you know, if you've got someone who does, you know, happen to screw up a step in one of the you know the configuration type exercises, that you don't have to go and like troubleshoot that. And again, if you're in a class which is you know 10-15 people, then troubleshooting one-on-one with people is possible. When you start talking about a 50-60 person class, troubleshooting one-on-one is not as like is not as doable. So it was really interesting to see how that dynamic of the training changed, and what pressures it kind of put onto the trainers, and what pressures, or more particularly, what pressures it relieved from the trainers. So that was really interesting to see. And like sort of one of the trainers, Chris Huss, who's a VMware as well as a Veeam instructor, and he said like it you know, basically completely changed how he trains, which was kind of amazing to see, like sort of, you know, like that amount of change that can be, that's possible.
So one thing that always comes to mind when I think about sort of the advancements in training or change in training is that change is inevitable, especially from a trainer's perspective when going to a training center. For example, if you're a contract trainer, you will very often end up, presenting on Adobe Connect or presenting with WebEx or GoToTraining or whatever, whatever the flavor of the month happens to be at that point. But it's really up to you to be aware of these technologies and prepared with these technologies, because even if it is a shift for the better, it is still a shift. And it really, like you said, in this particular case, trainers were pleasantly surprised at what they were getting from a product that had changed, essentially, from the way that they used to do it. But that isn't always the case. So again, I think we've probably stressed this enough up to this point, but I'm going to keep doing it. And that is that the only thing that you can count on is that things are going to keep changing, and the best thing you can do is be prepared.
Yeah, for sure. And as well as that, like sort of that, I think you're right, like sort of, and we have talked about it before, but you do have to be adaptable. And depending on what your delivery method is, that can be a big shift as well. So some people will adapt faster and better than others. Say for instance, going from an in-person ILT type class to being doing online delivery, that's a massive step. There are some people that simply can't, that won't cope with that change. But equally, there's people I think who would cope. They just need to. They just need to. They you need to kind of give it a chance. I go back to a couple of years ago where there was talk when initially there was talk of doing online deliveries and that sort of thing, and I remember Microsoft actually did certification for trainers. I don't know if you remember this, where you could actually get certified in doing online training, but you actually had to be certified for particular courses. I think from memory, the one that I got certified in might have been 2008, or might have been Server 2003. But I think it was 2008 where the certification came through. And I remember sitting in a room of trainers, and you know, most of them are still in the industry now. It was at an MCT summit where it was being done. And there were some people who were in the room that were vehemently against the idea of doing online training. And, you know, like just you could tell by their mannerisms, you could tell by what they were saying that, you know, basically there was this, look, it'll never work. It's something that'll never happen. It's, you know, like it's, it, you know, it, training has to be done in person in a room. And the problem is that times change. And if you're not willing to change with it, then essentially you're going to be stuck out in the cold. It does, like there are going to be some times where there are things that you need to, I guess, you know, see if it's going to work for you. And again, some people it may not work for, some people may not be able to make that change. But yeah, like it was interesting. I distinctly remember seeing, like, you know, this room of people and a lot of people who I'd known for a couple of years who I considered to be, you know, people that were professional trainers, and they were still, you know, but very, very much unwilling to embrace that change. I think now we're probably less resistant to that, just simply because we have to change for everything. And we've discussed this ad nauseum, like the idea of, you know, if you're an Azure trainer, if you're an Office 365 trainer, or anything to do with any online services, then you have to be ready for change. But equally, it goes for everything that we do, right? Everything is a constantly evolving process of how we do what we do. You know, like sort of the classrooms change. Even if it's not doing online versus ILT training, but classrooms themselves change. You know, like sort of there's now more places that will have, you know, electronic whiteboards as an example to be able to do training from, as opposed to having like a traditional whiteboard or you know, in Wayne's case, a blackboard, or a chalkboard. So you know, things have changed since, you know, like over the years, and we need to roll with it. You know, like even the delivery of coursework, I remember when we first made the change from paper-based coursework to electronic coursework. There were so many people, like in trainers, no, we'll have to, we always have to have, you know, the paper-based versions of your courseware. And now we look at that and you kind of go, well, why were we so resistant to it? You know, there's still people that will swear by it, you know, that you need to have paper-based courseware. I remember Wayne and I having a discussion where he would print out all the instructor manuals for everything. So he'd have, you know, shelves and shelves of books. At that point, I'd already swapped over to using, basically everything was running off my tablet or running off my PC. So I had, you know, I would rock up to a training center and I'd have, you know, have my laptop with me. Whereas Wayne would still be lugging around his manuals with him, and he's like, "How can you do that? Like, you know, like, don't you need to print it out?" It's like, no, not really. It's just a matter of changing how your delivery works.
Now, that being said, Wayne is an old man, so it was hard for him to change in general.
This is true. This is true. And Placebel is that because he had his wheelie walker with him. It was quite easy to be able to move the manuals around. Like he could just, you know, put them on that little shelf and walk around with them. So it was, you know, it was easy enough. And of course, he's not here to defend himself.
It is so unfair that he is not here to defend himself. Listen, but I'm feeling pretty good about it. So.
Absolutely. This will be the test to see if he listens.
That's right. He's going to walk up to you the next time you see him, and he's going to punch you in the arm.
Yes, but it'll only be a very, very soft punch. and he moves so slowly that he'll telegraph it quite a lot, so I'll be able to duck out of the way. So yeah, like I said, it's the way things change. We've talked about that a lot, like the fact that you do need to roll with it. But you're right, not all change is good change. There are some circumstances where change is, you know, like is change for the sake of change type thing. But regardless, like particularly if you're a contract instructor, you don't really have much of a say in it. You know, you kind of you turn up to a center to do training. You know, unless you've got a rider going along with your with your delivery, you kind of get given what you're given, and you have to work within those circumstances. I think if you're a staff trainer, possibly a bit different, because maybe you've got the ability to be able to work to affect that change. And also then potentially to resist the change as well. But yeah, like certainly as a contract instructor, you've got you know, bumpkus to be able to say about it, really. You know, kind of you rock up to a training center, he's your environment. Oh, okay. So.
It may be ad nauseum here, but one of the things that I think dramatically impacts, and we've seen this in our careers here, as well as much of our training before this, how a trainer handles the change will dictate how a returning student handles the change, and also how the rest of the class accept that environment. If somebody goes, oh, this environment, it's, you know, it does this and it doesn't do it the way I'm used to it, so it's obviously, you know, the wrong environment or something like that. If you come in with that sort of mentality, that makes it very difficult for the students to really appreciate what you're teaching them and then the interface they're using. Whereas if you go in there and you go, wow, I didn't know it did this. That's pretty cool. And I'm just discovering this and we're learning this together. Your students kind of bond with you and do some things. So it can really impact how your students feel about the outcome of the whole class based on how you feel about one aspect of your delivery, whether it be labs or whether it be the environment you use or whatever.
I think that's exactly right. Like, so there's like I think people often underestimate the impact, the direct impact that a trainer has on a student's experience. Like, not only, you know, their learning and, you know, obviously what the instructor's transferring from a knowledge perspective, but it is that experience type thing. Like, sort of, you know, you set the tone. It's the same. Same with everything, really. You know, like sort of in life, you know, if you set out to have a good day or a bad day, regardless of which way you aim, that's exactly what's going to happen. You know, like you're going to fulfill that day.
I just have to say, I feel inspired. I are you sure you didn't read that on a calendar somewhere,
or I'm pretty sure
an inspirational poster? Like,
but it's true though, right?
It you is know,
like sort of if, right. if and in the classroom, that then translates to the experience that the students are going to have. So like if you walk into the classroom with a bad attitude, or you know, with a everything's going to be terrible, then the students pick up on that. The students will have a bad day. You know, like it's the and you know. using an odd example, but when I many years ago, I used to go to a sit down, like go to a stand-up comedy place in Brisbane called the Sit Down Comedy Club. And
of course it was.
You know, well, I had seats. So I used to go regularly. You know, when I say regularly, for the first 2 years that it opened, I went, there was a group of friends, a core group of people that we went every week for the first like year and a half, 2 years that it was open. You know, so I got to know the comedians pretty well. Like the repeat ones anyway, because you know they kind of they recognise you as being in the crowd and that's the thing. And I used to have a chat with various different people and that's the thing. And I remember I don't remember why, but I remember seeing one particular comedian two nights in a row. And two nights in a row, he delivered exactly the same material. The first night was terrible. The second night was hilarious. Now, as the like, you know, and then if you translate that into a classroom delivery, the way that he delivered the first night and the way that the audience reacted to it is exactly the same sort of thing you get as a you know, someone who's in an instructor delivering to a student. If you're doing the same class, you know, 2 weeks in a row, depending on how you deliver and what your attitude is when you walk in, will definitely determine how the students are going to react to that class. And you're always going to have like one or two students, you know, who just come in with a bad attitude. But how you deal with that then makes that either a worse situation or improves it.
Well, and in your case here with the VMon conference, a lot of the things to take away from that is that even though there was change here, it was change for the better, but you have to be accepting of that change for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, and also like sort of, yeah, like there was one of the trainers who actually didn't like the environment, but also preferred that their students weren't able to do that jumping sort of thing, going from module one to module two, module three, module four. The idea was that they wanted to be able to control what their students did, and that didn't like the idea of their students being able to sort of jump ahead, if you like. So they actually said, look, you know, would it be possible to have the environment reveal as it goes along? So, you know, like sort of, so they can actually dictate when particular labs were released to the students. And it was kind of, it was interesting because that to me kind of defeats at least part of the purpose of it. And I get what they're saying, but equally like sort of the discussion I had with that person was about the fact that that with adult learners, you kind of can't minuscule control them. You know, there is a level of responsibility that you know, if you say to students, I want you to do this, but don't continue on to this, and they continue on, well, that's, you know, they're adult learners. So they're going to do that anyway. Like they're going to do that regardless of whether the environment is a build one, or whether it's one that's that's modularized. It's just that if it's modularized, it's going to make it, you know, slightly easier. If you know what I mean. So yeah, like it's just different way to be able to present and different attitude to it as well. That particular person, I think, got the idea of it. Like, you know, like it, as part of the delivery, like was able to. Over the course of the delivery, did kind of see it as being a benefit. But again, like, you know, it's a different way to approach it. So,
well, enough about that serious stuff. You told me something very exciting before we got on this recording, but yet somewhat mysterious. You would not tell me what it is that you're expecting, but that you have something about a new gadget.
I do. And I'm just quickly looking up to make sure that I get the right name for it, because I can't remember what food product it is. And that will make sense in just a moment.
Kyle's going to try kale for the first time ever.
Yeah. you've heard the best recipe for preparing kale, right? which is to chop it into small pieces, put it into a frying pan with oil, heat it all up, and then put that into the bin.
Yes, exactly. I did hear something very similar to that on a television program that I was watching, where a guy went through this big elaborate recipe, and then at the end was, and then he threw it just in the garbage. But it was for Swiss chard, not for kale. But it applies to
right. Both okay. Well, it's the same. Same idea, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, they both have the same as they would say, the same flavor profile. as in cardboard.
Green cardboard.
Green cardboard. That's right. And to be honest, the green color doesn't add to the flavor at that's all.
Right. It does not.
So what I have coming it was one of the trainers from Veen who is an international trainer who actually recommended this or who mentioned it to me, and I saw it and I went, that is absolutely brilliant. It's from a company called Mogix, Mogics. And if you go to www.mogix.com, and I'm not working on commission, but I think this is awesome. They have two products. They have the Power Donut and the Power Bagel.
Okay.
And basically what it is, it's a round power strip, which sounds odd, I know, but bear with me. So the one that I've got is the one that I've ordered, and I think it's actually being delivered today to home, is the bagel. And the idea is that you can then use it to, it has a cord that wraps around it. So it's got a cable that wraps around it so that it then stores away nicely. Because it's round, it's a little bit more compact than if it's obviously if it's flat and a straight power strip. It has multi adapters to be able to plug in. So you can then use, they can plug in multiple countries. Plugs to be able to plug in. It comes with an adapter for the actual power plug itself, where you plug it into the wall, so that's a multi-country adapter. And it also includes two high-speed USB chargers, also within it. And more importantly, with the bagel. Is that it actually includes, it allows support for the grounding pin. Now, that's one of the challenges that I have with traveling to, traveling around, or particularly with getting, sort of universal adapters for travel, is that that's not always the case. So it's not always the case that the travel adapter will actually take the third pin, so it won't take the grounding pin. Whereas this one is designed to be able to accommodate that. It actually doesn't plug in, but because of the design of it being in the round circle, essentially it just dangles out, and it allows you to be able to plug in, which is awesome.
Now, Kyle, first of all, you had me at donut and bagel. But then you started talking about power and stuff like that, and I totally lost interest. But one does, you know, being a foodie, one does have to suggest that maybe a donut and a bagel are often very similar looking food things. So what is the difference between the power bagel and the power donut?
So the difference between the power bagel and the power donut is only for America. So it only takes US plugs. The power bagel takes international plugs.
I somehow feel slighted.
Well, no, because Americans like donuts. That's all it is.
I think New York City might be one of the largest consumers of bagels anywhere in the world.
Well, okay, fair enough. But I didn't invent the name, but I'm just it's quite cool. So say for instance, if as you know, I know that you've got travel coming up to other countries. So once you go to the other countries, this is where this becomes handy because all other countries have the same power plug.
See,
and it makes it handy.
As an American, I still don't know what you're talking about. Power is power.
I understand this, however, so not only is power not power, because it could be 110 or it could be 240 or any somewhere in between. It
could also be three.
Could be three.
Yeah. Power three can what? Be any amount of voltage or amperage.
Well, that's true. That's I said, like sort of anywhere in between but like if you're coming out of the power socket from the wall, generally it's going to be either 110 volts or 240 volts or something between those.
Okay, it won't be three then.
No. The end result of it after it's gone through a transformer, that may be three, but it generally won't be. But now, it generally won't be AC at that point. It'll be a DC current.
So now, in my limited experience in international travel, which I do have some of, and I did actually at one point have a pretty good supply of international power adapters, there is a huge difference between a power adapter and a transformer.
That's correct. So this is not a transformer. This is only a power adapter.
Okay.
But... The that's actually not like it's honestly nowadays that's not as big a deal, because pretty much every product most computing products, even like phone chargers, everything like that is roaming voltage now. So whereas you used to have a challenge with that, like you know, like there's you know, you can, and obviously if you plug the 110 volts something into a 240 volt something like 240 volts like wall plug, then the smoke would get out and things don't work anymore.
Right.
That's what
experienced that with an electric razor, I know what you're talking about.
Yep. Well, because all the electronics run on smoke. So if the smoke gets out, if the smoke gets out, then they stop working. But as I said, nowadays that's not a big of an issue. And electric razors are probably electric razors, hair dryers, that's the thing, probably the last bastion of was the last bastion of those. But even majority of those that I've come across now are roaming roaming voltage.
So
obviously you've got to check, but yeah, generally they'll go into 110 or 240 with no issues.
So now this is a perfect example of a educational moment for our listeners, aka me. So I have my laptop, whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is.
Yep.
What do I need in order to be able to plug that in Singapore or Dubai or London?
So first off, you'd have to look at the adapter to make sure that the, like, so the, as in the power, like the power brick itself,
right.
Make sure that it says that it's, 110 to 240.
Okay.
Or it might say 110 to 220.
Okay.
But basically, once you're outside of the US, there's very few places that run on 110.
Okay.
But as I said, majority of electronic devices now are roaming, so you won't that shouldn't be an issue. The other thing you'll need is you'll then need an adapter to be able to plug that into the wall. So whether that be an adapter which is a 1-to-1 type adapter. So that will then transform the plug itself from what's in the wall. And say, for instance, Singapore uses the UK version of the plug. So it's two sort of rectangular ones and one, or it's three rectangular ones, two that's horizontal and one that's vertical. For the wall socket, so you'll need something to be able to adapt from that to your US socket, so you can plug into that. So the problem is that, say for instance, if you have more than one device,
Yes.
And so, for instance, if you're traveling, you'll probably have more than one device, or at least more than one charger. So therefore, say for instance, you might have a laptop, like, you know, your laptop power brick. Plus, as well as that, if you've got, you know, say for instance, a tablet and your phone. So that's three chargers, possibly. Then what you can do is use one of these sort of things. So use one of the in this case, the bagel, if you're traveling outside of the US. So plug one of those into the wall, and then you've got multiple power ports that you could plug those adapters into. That's one thing. Or alternatively, if you didn't want to plug all those in, you could plug one in to be able to change the plug the bagel into the wall to change the adapter for your laptop brick, and then charge off the two charging ports for your phone and your tablet.
So there is a third option. Not everybody can use the third option, but some people can. Yes. And that is that you wait for Kyle to get wherever you are and then borrow whatever he brought from him.
Well,
I personally recommend that.
although for some of our listeners, that may be a long wait.
Yeah, you would be surprised, because Kyle does show up in a lot of places.
But you're right. Like, so, you know, like I've done this enough that I do come prepared for these things. So I have a couple of multi-power adapters now. So I have a power strip which I can swap out the bit that plugged, like the actual cable that runs from the wall to the power strip. So I can swap that out, and I have I think I've got four different countries, like of that, you know, the power strip to the cable to the wall cables. I've got four different countries versions of those, which takes me, like, that'll do the majority of the world.
Now, is it easier to have the cables, or is it easier to have the plug?
That depends. Like, say for instance, for on day to day, like, it's just a bit, it can be a bit cumbersome having the plugs. So say for instance, if I go to the US as an example now, I have a power adapter for my, or sorry, the power brick for my laptop. I can pull again, I can change over the cable from the brick to the wall. I can change that into different countries. So I can pull that out and swap that for a US version. So it means that, say for instance, if I sit down at a desk somewhere or whatever, I don't have to redo, I don't have to have power plugs that plug into the wall that then adjust to another plug and that sort of thing. Which I find with those, sometimes what happens is that particularly if you've got, like, there's one of the power bricks that I have, which doesn't have that replaceable cable, and it actually has quite a bit of weight to it. So I then have, depending on what the position of that plug in the wall is, I actually have to put something under it to be able to support which one of the adapters that I'm using. So it just means you've got one less extra thing to carry or to be able to use. So I kind of use a combination of all of these things.
Well, I will make sure that before I travel that I get my travel list together and give it to Kyle so that he will tell me exactly what I need to go and spend my money on. Apparently, it will not be a power donut, though. It'll be a power bagel.
Yeah, you want a power bagel because, like, that'll do you for the US, because, like, the native plug on it is a US plug, but it also then includes the ability to be able to use it overseas as well. So.
Now, is this device a crazily expensive device?
It's the largest. It's not really. Like, if you have a look at the pricing of, like, of a good quality power adapter, like of a good quality travel plug, they're actually not cheap. What I mean by that is if it's a if it's one that's actually got a inbuilt USB chargers, that sort of thing, they're actually not cheap. So So like yeah, like it's not crazily expensive. Like it's not you know, like the go and buy it for like, you know, for $5 at the local, you know, quickie mart or whatever. But it's yeah, it's not it's it's. I didn't think it was overly expensive.
All right. Well, maybe, just maybe, our sound guy extraordinaire James Finley might be able to put a link to this in the to this device in the posting for this particular podcast.
Yep.
So is that it? Is that all that you have as far as gadget news?
What more do you want from me?
Well,
I think that's all. I think that's all. It's been like I've been reasonably, you know, like frugal the last few weeks.
Well, that's true. But you've also been home for almost a week now, so that you must be dying to get out on the road. So, and I actually have a sort of a follow up question to that. When you travel to the U.S., and this is a little known fact about Kyle, which you can confirm with anybody who's been around him when he travels, Kyle packs the most stuff into his carrying cases, as or you know, backpack or messenger bag or whatever, more than any person I've ever seen, because he's gotten very good at it. But he also, and I'm gonna kind of whisper this so that his wife does not hear, also has a tendency when he's in America to purchase things from a certain online retailer.
Oh, no, that's it. My wife knows of this. she's often ordered stuff to my hotel room. So.
So now my question, or my yes. statement, whichever way I'm going with this, is when you travel to other countries, do you order from their online retailer extraordinaires?
No. So, I have.
Yeah. So, for example, have you ever ordered anything from Alibaba?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I know people that have, but no, I haven't ordered anything from Alibaba.
I know people who have. They're fine people. I wouldn't criticize them at all.
Well, no, I wouldn't criticize them. Yeah, no, it's more from the convenience, because like normally, if I'm in the US, like it's for like a longer period of time. If we're generally somewhere else, then it's the exchange rate isn't as good is one thing. There's most of the, like, you know, say for instance, like I've bought shoes before, and I've had those ordered delivered.
You
so
have
like
done
running
that.
Shoes. I have. I've had running shoes delivered, and that's because I knew what size I wanted, and as well as that, they're far cheaper in the US than they are anywhere else in the world. Normally it's only if I'm in the US that I'll do that. So, you know, yeah. So birthday presents, that's the things for the kids. That'll all be like that, yeah. So like that's stuff that I'll order online. But yeah. So no, not normally from other countries. But as I said, I have before. There was, I remember when I was in London for visiting my sister, and there was a I think from memory it might have been the there was a it was a it sounds really strange an espresso milk frother. that my sister had, and she, like it worked brilliantly. It was great for doing on the stovetop for like, you know, for heating up milk and then frothing it up and that sort of thing. And I asked her where she'd got it from, and she got it from like from Amazon in the UK. So I ordered it from Amazon and had it delivered. So yeah, you know, sometimes. Sometimes, but not often. Like, but yeah, because like normally, if I'm going outside of the country, if I'm going to somewhere else apart from the US, it's normally not for as long a period of time. So, and plus, as well as that, exchange rate's not as good. So
there are two lessons here. One of them is that if you are not in the US and you're coming to the US, you may want to reserve some extra funds in order to be able to order from Amazon while you're here, or whatever online retailer that we were just talking about. But the other thing is, and this is, again, I can't stress this highly enough because I still haven't found what I'm looking for in this device. You may have to spend some fairly serious cash on what you use to transport all of these items that we've always, you know, the gadgets and gizmos and all of that kind of stuff. Whatever we use to transport that stuff becomes just as important as the stuff that's inside of it, because a good, comfortable messenger bag or a good, comfortable backpack, one that you actually use as a backpack and not as a over the one shoulder, because you're going to end up walking crooked. Trust me. Or at least and the then, whole yeah, world like, is going to start tilting.
The cool kids got it wrong. Just let's just put it that way.
Yes, the cool kids have got it wrong. I can tell you from years of back pain after trying to cart around 17-inch laptops that weigh, you know, 7 pounds. That's just the one thing. The you know, power brick weighs an additional 2 pounds, and just, you know, yeah, you can build up muscle structure, but eventually you do end up twisting and hurting and aching. So do yourself a favor. Go out there, go to good quality retailers. Don't just order something sight unseen unless you're willing to throw that money away. I can tell you from a multitude of broken straps and bags and things that didn't work, things that were too small, things that were too big, things that didn't fit my body right and stuff like that. I still haven't found the best bag. So that is really important.
And that all, like, the like bags change as well, like sort of bag technologies and how things work, etc. And even, like, as you said, like, sort of, you know, like, say, you know, years ago we used to lug around, like, you know, the massive laptop, right? You don't do that anymore because laptops don't need to be as massive to be able to do what you need it to do, because, you know, like, say, for instance, you've got cloud resources, etc. So you don't need to have, like, obviously the technology has changed anyway, but you don't need to have, like, you know, a machine that has 32 gig of memory and dual processors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But so that, like, so that's changed. But as well as that, like, I find that I actually have, I have different bags that I use for different circumstances as well, which, you know, like, I guess, like, my wife does the same. She, you know, she has different handbags when she's going out. I have different different bags that I use for different things as well. So I have a bag that I travel with, which has kind of pockets for, like, I've got two that are my go-to ones. I've got two, like, one is a backpack and one is a messenger. They're both from the same company, but they are different. Like, I use them in slightly different ways. But, you know, like, if you're traveling, then having easy access to things like, say, for instance, passports, etc., being able to put that away into secure locations, being able to have easy access to a pen to be able to write, you know, your entry card stuff, etc. Like, just simple things like that that you get used to, and, you know, like, that it's once you start thinking about it, you start putting things in particular hole, like, particular, you know, hidey holes in a bag or whatever, that you can pack a lot in. You don't want to pack too much in, because if you pack too much in, then it becomes like a mission to wander around with it. And if you, you know, say, for instance, last trip that I had coming back, I had a number of hours layover in LA. So I went out for a walk. Now, went out for a walk, obviously, with my carry-on, because I couldn't leave that anywhere. And that carry-on was a messenger bag that was chocker full of stuff. If I'd overweighted that with a lot of stuff, or if I hadn't thought about what I was actually taking on board, then maybe I would have had too much into it. It would have been, you know, would have caused me issues actually, like, carrying that around. And that's the thing, like, sort of, so, like, if, say, for instance, when I'm working in, like, you know, working from home, I've got a backpack, or I've either got a backpack or a messenger bag that I take out with me that really just doesn't have much in it. It's got, like, it carries with me a notepad, because I'm old school like that, the laptop, and, you know, a pair of headphones and a charger for both. And that's all I take. So that's really light. And it's also very compact as well. So I don't have to have, like, something that's really massive to be able to carry things around with. So it's different, you know, like you may have multiple the right bags. Just depends on the circumstance.
And if anybody would know, it would be Kyle.
Well, yeah, I do have a collection, because I like you, like, you know, I'm still trying to find the like, you know, still trying to find the perfect bag. I think I've got them now. Like for around home, I've got a crumpler bag that I use, which is a small one, and I've got a couple of crumplers in different sizes, and then I've got the two ones that I travel with, not just internationally but domestically as well, kind of, they have little pockets to be able to do things like put you know, a change of clothes in, as an example, to keep that neat. So, you know, say, for instance, if I'm doing a long layout, whatever, if it's in between long hauls, then I actually like to have a shower and get changed. Because, you know, just sort of freshens you up a bit and gets you ready for whatever the next leg is.
Right.
If you're ever in Singapore as a layover, I highly recommend having a massage as well. So just as an odd thing, but have a massage, you know, have a shower, change of clothes, and then the next leg, because wherever you're going to from Singapore is always going to be a long flight, regardless of which direction you go. You know, it just makes the next leg a little bit more bearable. But yeah, so having a little pocket to be able to keep clothes in, to keep that separate from, like, you know, from everything else that you're doing, so you're not. Fumbling it, you know, in the middle of the night, trying to find a pen in your bag, and then, you know, pull out a pair of socks that have been, you know, stinking up the plane for the last 3 hours. So,
I thought you were going to say thong. I thought you were going to say thong. You didn't, but I thought you were.
I didn't, because, like, you know, like that would you know, who wears those? Who wears underwear? I mean, come on.
Well, you know what? I think on that note, maybe we ought to do our final housekeeping and maybe let our dear listener get their ears back, because there are things they cannot unhear.
That is true. That is true. And they're, like, you know, basically at this point, they're picturing a steel wool to be able to scrub images from their brains.
I've tried it many times when talking with Kyle. It doesn't work.
Alcohol also helps as well.
Yeah, that does actually help. So let's talk about how you could subscribe to this podcast. You can reach this podcast and others like it, other episodes like this one, on trainerstechtalk.net. And
see, you always, you know, hassle me about it, but it's not so easy, is it, to remember?
I don't have cheat sheets or anything else up, and I was clearing my throat to try to pronounce it correctly, like I always, almost always do. And if you wanted to reach us on Twitter, you could do so at TuesdayTTT. If you want to reach Kyle directly on Twitter, you could do that at Windows PC Guy. And if you wanted to reach me, myself, and I, or just one of us, at Brian Bork, excuse me. Let's try that again. At
Brian Bork, LODS. I'll help you, Brian.
James is going to have to clean that one up. And of course, our big shout out to our sponsor, Learn On Demand Systems, who can be reached at www.learnondemandsystems.com. Go check out that website. It's newly redesigned and it has a lot of great information. We are really starting to trying to get out there and let people know that we've got actual thoughts, and not only do we have thoughts, but those thoughts can actually relate to things that help them do their business. Of course, Kyle's always helping people do business. So.
I give it a go.
Before we leave, Kyle, in the next 30 days, are you going anyplace fancy?
I am. So I will be in, and I believe I'm not going to be alone there. I'm going to be in London at the Tableau Conference. That's at the end of June, beginning of July. And then after that, in Las Vegas, in Inspire and Ready. So the two conferences that are being held almost concurrently for the first time ever.
And Learn On Demand Systems will be represented at all of those events. And so if you really can't help yourself, by all means, seek Kyle out. He may post some things about on Facebook and on Twitter as to where he might be located. And you could go find him, talk to him, and completely ignore me like everyone else does.
Oh, Brian. It's very sad, but true.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, Kyle, there are many things that I can do for you, but nothing can replace the way that you do our sign-off. So would you like to take a crack at it from the wilds of Jurassic World?
So for sure. So thank you very much, all of you, for joining us on what has been another exciting episode of Trainers Talking Tech on Tuesday. Unless, of course, you didn't enjoy it, in which case, thanks for joining us once more for Patch and Switch.
When they come to my house, pasta fazula, Tallulah. Oh, do have a bagel, bagel. Now don't be so bashful, Nashville. Everybody eats when they come to my house.